Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this, at the suggestion of our guest, the Purple Potato Eater Show, because we will be talking in our second fractional portion about purple potatoes and how they might benefit your health. We give thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. I want to introduce our guests, first of all, from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, registered dietitian and manager of clinical nutrition services, Jean Jones. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Tony.
When did she lose her dietitian to the stars title?
Yeah, when did I lose that? I was just thinking that, Rick. Thank you.
Well, people age. Mean? People retire. New morals come into play.
You're gone.
Yeah. And with her, dietitian to a new generation from St. Clair, registered dietitian, clinical dietitian, Andrea Campbell. Hi, Andrea.
I'm kind of afraid now.
It's the thing is, as you age, you naturally accept a little less responsibility, and that's the way it goes.
Gene, just get over it, because it happens to me all the time.
Speaking of
smacking
irresponsible
on the radio,
the manager of communications infrastructure at UK to tell you about our online presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That's right. That's Morehead State Public Radio's website, WMKY.org. Just do a little search there. You will find the Health Matters. You know, if you want to, you can listen to all those other shows or go read about those other shows, but really we want you to lock in on Health Matters. There you'll find a list of the most recent shows. You'll get the summary, you'll get a link to the podcast, or you can listen to the audio right from that page. Certainly we encourage you that is where we have the audio vault for all of the Health Matters shows. Then after you've completed your listening task and you decide it's time to comment or interact, jump over to Facebook. Yeah, we're old. We're still with the Facebook gang. You know, I know all the kids have moved on. They're doing something different. But hey, who cares? We're on Facebook. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show, or do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. You'll find our fan page. There you can like us. You can leave us some comments. Leave us some feedback. You can look at other people's feedback. You can certainly do all kinds of things to get our attention. We certainly have been known to cater shows to suggestions left on the site. Absolutely your chance to interact with us. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, the 5 Steps for a Healthy Heart. This is our recognition of the fact that we are currently undergoing a seismic change in our dietary recommendations. And we are combining...
Does that mean there's an earthquake in them?
Well, it means there is a shakeup, that's for sure. We've made some significant changes.
So the pyramid's out?
The pyramid?
Nice call, Rick. See, I'm still stuck on the 4 basic food groups. You know, you got
I like those 4 basic food groups,
yeah,
thank you.
They work for me. I could remember them. But this is a compilation of the 2015 International Conference on Nutrition and Medicine, and also some tips from the European Society of Cardiology, their 2015 Congress. They had a panel discussion called What Should You Eat to Lead a Heart Healthy Life, and had some very, very big name people in nutrition at that meeting. So they have, and this is actually courtesy Cameron Wells, who's a dietitian and writes for the New York Times, helped us out with this. And here's what we've got. First of all, the first tip, build your diet around plant-based foods all day, every day.
Things that grow, huh?
Things that grow.
In the ground.
In the ground, yeah. And Gene, this is difficult. It will require some advanced planning. It will require some different grocery shopping. My wife, she prepares her broccoli every morning that she's going to eat for lunch to bring along. You can't simply stop at the concession stand at the ballpark. You can't simply go to any fast food restaurant and have a plant-based diet.
No, not really.
No. Vegetables, beans, whole grains, some fruit, the center of your diet all day, every day, to see positive changes in your metabolic risk factors. Number two, minimize refined grains, added salt, and sweeteners. Instead, opt for fresh fruits and vegetables. If you can get your sweetness from natural sources rather than adding it to whatever you're eating or drinking, you're going to get ahead. And particularly, I think the pendulum is swinging and sugar is starting to become a real suspect. That's sucrose and the high fructose corn syrup as well. These, in some people's estimations, are the things, in fact, to be avoided.
Indeed. Sugar seems to be the evil food these days.
Yeah, we'll talk more about number three. I'll give you number three. Include some nuts and seeds. Avoid oils. Now, this is, again, this is the American version. This is the American dietitian version. Actually, the European Congress did not mention avoiding oils. They felt that olive oil in fairly large amounts was a good idea. So we'll have more about this in our second fractional portion when we talk about saturated fats. That's our sponsor, the Five Steps for a Heart Healthy Diet.
You realize, Tony, that health matters is kind of, I guess, that must be why we've managed to stay on the air for 13 years, because we've, over the years, included nuts.
Oh, God.
That's awful. That's really bad.
No,
look at this. Andrea, Gene and I have said that's bad. Andrea?
I kind of agree we're all nuts.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you know it. We've made a living in it, Tony. You're the
okay,
chief.
Okay, we're split 50-50. That was not a very good joke. You've got to get above 50%. We'll just edit that one out.
Good luck with that.
We start our show with our salute to Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear, who was named by Modern Healthcare as one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare. This is his first year in the rankings, and he is now only 10 spots below the director of the CDC. The sound you hear is spontaneous applause breaking forth from our Health Matters listeners. Gene is speechless. I love this. Do you have a question about Steve Beshear?
Why aren't you on the list, Tony?
Well,
I can give you many.
Yeah, that's right. I did not bring the Affordable Care Act, Insurance Exchange, and Medicaid expansion in the state of Kentucky. He did that. I think that more than House Bill 1, which has been a couple years ago, but in recognition of his accomplishments in expanding Kentuckians' access to insurance, he was listed as one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare in the United States. So he wins our Health Matters Hottie of the Day. He is a hero of today's youth, a Health Matters Hottie. Now, the reason, actually, this show came about, and we just might as well go ahead. We're halfway through the first segment and talk about it. We had to do another show. That's one reason, because we are contractually obligated. But I was talking with Gene about this botulism outbreak that occurred in Fairfield County, Ohio. And for those, we broke this a couple of weeks ago on Health Matters. This was from the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report that the CDC puts out weekly. And they reported the final analysis of an April 21st, 2015 botulism outbreak. Just to remind you, this was a church potluck.
Of course.
Of course it was. It was potato salad at a church potluck. It was potato salad prepared with home canned potatoes using a boiling water canner. And it turns out that does not kill the botulinum spores that make botulism. Now remember, Botox is botulinum toxin, and that paralyzes your facial muscles and makes you younger. makes you look younger, sorry. But if you...
To a point.
Yes. If you take botulism into your digestive system rather than a healthy-looking, wrinkle-free face, you wind up being paralyzed. One person died in the emergency room, 11 on mechanical ventilators, about 30 people admitted to the hospital with botulism, all from one particular person's canned potatoes that she or he made into a potato salad and brought to a church potluck. Now, Rick and I were sobered by the fact that it must be horrible to be a person whose potato salad was more lethal than a terrorist on a French train with an AK-47. I mean, she killed more people than that terrorist did on the French train.
Can you imagine how bad he or she feels?
Right.
I just can't imagine.
I tell you what, I think my lucky stars, I've never liked potato salad.
I love potato salad.
Never.
Yeah. But now, Gene, you have very strict rules about church potluck.
I'm not going to eat much, I'm going to eat things. I'm going to pick and choose things that I'm not worried about how they've been handled, because I would not be eating the potato
salad.
You're
one of those. Huh?
Yes, I am one of those. I'll eat the green beans.
We actually have a segment on picky eaters in our third fractional portion, but in this case, I'm firmly on Gene's side. Potato chips, not a particular healthy thing. Potato chips are hard to screw up.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about them sitting out. It's okay. They might get a little soggy.
Everybody's just reaching in with their own hand to get it.
I can handle some infectious issues unless it's obvious.
But we're talking about botulism.
Yeah. And you told me originally mayonnaise was supposed to be...
People used to think that if you put mayonnaise in products that you took to a potluck or something, that it was okay because, it's got vinegar in it, it's acidic, and everything would be, great. But not if you've got home canned potatoes that you didn't process properly to begin with and then didn't heat up.
Yeah, a big problem there. So again, Gene's approach and my approach is that if it is something that requires quite a bit of interventional type cooking, that I am not fond of it. The other thing, we have an absolute rule, 2 hours in trash.
Oh, I'm no, 30 minutes. I'm out of there. If you've driven an hour with something for the potluck in the back seat of your car, I'm not touching it.
Okay. You guys are such
picky eaters.
Well, I had a different word, but well, let's go with yours.
Okay, picky eaters, right. So you're...
Well, it's not picky, you're church potluck snob.
We are live.
We are alive.
Yes. To prepare for you. Okay, we might have made a little mistake. But we went through a lot of trouble.
Oh, I appreciate that. But, let's...
But how many church potlucks have you went to? And look, you're still alive.
Because I didn't eat the potato salad.
I went to more. I went to more than you probably.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I just don't like potato salad.
Oh, well...
So you're good. But I do think you've really got to look at this. You've got to be cautious. If you don't know how it was fixed, and certainly if you don't know how long it's been out, this is a big issue. This is not the position you want to put yourself in.
So when it comes to the church, you're staying with the protein-based stuff. You're going with the meats.
No.
Because my mother-in-law used to thaw turkeys out on the kitchen counter for days. That's why. It's like, you never know what people have done.
I will say, we're saving it. Last Christmas, I went home. My mom, we had lunch. It was a nice ham and, all the fixings and so forth. And then we had dinner. And in between time, the table remained set. This was the way it happened. And no, we did not eat very much for dinner. Lunch carried us through the evening. We got something. That's too long to let it lie out. And you've seen that over and over again, Rick, where the table is prepared. We used to go to outdoor family reunion stuff where the table would be full pretty much all afternoon. And then you come in and you would eat dinner from the same table you ate lunch from.
And
you got lucky. That's all I can say.
Maybe I have trained my intestinal system to deal with that.
Well, that may be true.
Yeah. Rick the Vulture, basically.
Well, I'm thinking,
can eat roadkill and
the iron gullet.
I ate that. Sounds like a restaurant.
It does. That's great. Write that down.
We'll open it up. The other thing you mentioned, Gene, that I wanted to point out to our radio fans is you said this is what happens when you don't take home ec.
Yeah. Amen, brother. Yeah. Where is home ec when you need it?
Never mind.
Well, if you're going to bring food to the church potluck, you really have to think about preparing it properly. And if you don't know what you're doing in the kitchen, then it's going to be other people affected.
You know what you have to do. You have to marry appropriately. Right?
My
husband can you some fine food now.
Okay? He
may be right
there. Any of our church potlucks, and my wife hasn't killed anybody.
I hear you. I think we probably lost half of our radio fans in this segment alone. We're going to try to control the bleeding a little bit and repair our reputation during the break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
Are you?
Yes, I am. And proud of it and probably lost a lot of friends at church.
I'm telling you, you're not invited anymore.
No potato salad for you, buddy.
Now, the nice thing is you're never ever going to have to organize.
No, I won't organize the function. Well, let's face it, if Gene does it, it's basically as soon as everything's fixed, it goes in the trash.
No, the refrigerator.
So, at any rate, this is the Purple Potato Eater Show. I'm Dr. Tony Weaver, and with us, besides Rick Phillips and myself, we have as our special guest from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, up-and-coming future dietitian to the stars, Andrea Campbell. Hi, Andrea.
No pressure.
And also, after a lifetime of useful dietary advice, in the sunset of her career, manager of clinical nutrition services, Jean Jones. Hi, Jean.
Hi there, Tony. Tony.
Our sponsor for the second time, the Five Steps to a Heart Healthy Diet, reminding you this is a combination of the 2015 International Conference on Nutrition and Medicine held in the U.S. and the European Society of Cardiology, and we are seeing massive changes in dietary advice for cardiac care. First of all, this is very sensible advice. This will not change. Build your diet around plant-based foods all day, every day. This is going to require some advanced planning, but if you do not have plant-based foods in every meal, and really, purple potatoes aside, regular potatoes, not the best plant-based food. If you're using that as your vegetable, you're stretching a bit. Jean does not accept corn as a vegetable. She has this whole thing about it being a grain.
It's a grain. It's a grain.
So you're going to have to go find you some leafy green vegetables. Sorry about that, but
kale.
That is... No, no. I know you better.
I had kale for supper tonight. Yes, and it was delicious.
Two is minimize your refined grains, added salt, and sweeteners. Opt for fresh fruit and vegetables. And again, we're starting to get very, very disillusioned with sugar and the high fructose corn syrup. Three, include some nuts and seeds. Avoid oils, says the American group. Embrace olive oil, says the European group. And we'll get into that a little bit more this segment. Four, which is, it's almost past due. Avoid foods containing trans fats. I mean, they are on their way to being phased out. They will remain in small amounts. If you're going to have something that's stable on the shelf for month after month, you're going to have to put some trans fats in it. The other fats really won't hold up. So there'll be that, but there are very strict limits on the amount of trans fats. That should get easier. According to the American group, avoid saturated fats. I think, again, we'll get into the evidence on this. Saturated fats are not the nasty things that we thought they were, and in fact, we're concerned that in our attempts to avoid saturated fats, we may have, in fact, caused more harm than good. And then number five, this was from the American group, which I really liked, have a reliable source of vitamin B12. And you know, Gene,
that's really good.
It is. This is something you don't think about, but B12, in order to be absorbed, requires both a protein your stomach makes and your stomach has to make acid. If you are taking the purple pill or other acid blocking medicines, your stomach is not making acid and you can't absorb the B12. After you reach age 50, which half the people around this table have reached, after you reach age 50. Yes.
Some of us aren't even close.
Yep. We're clearly... Andrea's not going to give you much support on this one, Jean. She's the future dietitian of this art. But after you reach age 50, many people stop producing stomach acid anyway, whether they're on medication or not, and that interferes with it. So you've got to think your way through vitamin B12. It's cheap, it's simple, it's very safe, but the American group says have a reliable source of vitamin B12, and we agree with them. That is our sponsor, Five Steps for a Heart-Healthy Diet. We'll talk more in our third and final fractional portion. Now, before we talk about colorful potatoes, before we actually talk about purple potatoes, we were having lots of fun in the last fractional portion arguing about church potlucks, and Rick apparently will eat anything anywhere at any time.
And good for
him. That's not true. That's absolutely
true. He won't
eat
potato salad.
I don't like cold salads. Don't come at me with your cold salad stuff.
Okay.
Well, it'd probably be warm, though, if you've been sitting out.
Yeah, if it's been sitting out, just allow it time, Rick. It'll warm up. It'll be bubbling slightly. Okay, fair enough. No cold salads for Rick. Everything else is fair game. Jean and I start to get a little squeamish. I have been known to eat a little bit before I go to the potluck so I can socialize but without necessarily intoxicating myself with the food. Now, Andrea, but you had an experience at a church potluck.
Oh, did I ever have an experience? Okay, so our family has the same rule. We eat a little bit and then we pick at the wieners. You know, the little wieners that they put in the crock pot.
Cocktail wieners?
Yes, okay. Those. And so, three wieners, that's it. That's what you eat. And, you know, you're not supposed to be able to get hurt on that.
That's one tooth.
You're not?
Well, you're not.
Okay, so the three of the small hot dogs that you put in the crock pot, you call them pick at the wieners.
Yes.
This is a family tradition. I'm not aware of pick at the wieners.
It's just that Mom figured that, because she was always afraid of food being tainted, that, you know, three wieners isn't enough to get you sick.
Okay. I see. So this could be a problem, but
it made us not look rude.
Right.
Because we ate the food.
Right. And if you get less than 10 germs, you're safe. That's a biological... never mind. Can't make
so, but we can't decide. The church is a very small church, mainly just family members. And so we can't decide whether Papo just came in for the stomach illness or if the wieners were just tainted. Everybody at that entire little potluck was at the hospital the next day or a couple of days. And we were all hospitalized. And it was very unpleasant. So proteins and heated foods are still a no-go.
Yeah, yeah. If they've been out, again, our country ham has been out since lunch. Not.
Of course, that's got enough salt in it. To, you know.
I think the country ham's probably pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's what...
Just a bunch of weak bellies.
Fair enough. But there is living proof that church potluck can cause problems if the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report was not enough. Now, on to purple potatoes. And Jean sent this to me because she said, you know, potatoes in general have a bad rep. Potatoes are not great vegetables. Now, this is theoretical. I want you to understand. This is still in the lab, but maybe we can resurrect potatoes. Colon cancer, second leading cause of cancer-related death in the U.S., responsible for more than 50,000 deaths annually, second behind lung cancer. In the state of Kentucky, we lose 3,500 to lung cancer a year, about 800 to colon cancer, and both sexes obviously affected. It turns out, says Penn State University, and Penn State had almost did worse than UK. Well, they did do worse than UK on their opening day of football season, so they have need to find something to celebrate, and perhaps they will celebrate their potato research. Baked purple flesh potatoes suppress the growth of colon cancer tumors in the laboratory in a petri dish, and in mice, they appear to target the cancer stem cells. The way the leading scientist on the team described it, you might compare cancer stem cells to the roots of the weeds. You can cut the weed, but if the roots are there, it will grow back. Potatoes, purple potatoes, an extract of purple potatoes seems to actually kill the root. Their initial laboratory study, they found the baked potato extract suppressed the spread of cancer stem cells and increase their deaths. They tested whole baked purple potatoes on mice with colon cancer and found similar results. Portion size for a human would be about the same as eating a medium-sized purple potato for lunch and dinner, or one large purple potato per day. Gene, I know nothing about purple potatoes. Are they tasty? These are baked, so I assume you can fix them like the regular potatoes that I see.
I don't know that I've ever had a purple potato. Andrea says that she's had them.
All right, Andrea, tell us about what you know about purple potatoes. They go well with wiener picking
events. They're good in the green beans.
Yeah.
We just had them in beef stews. Mom would buy a little bun, like the little ones, mm-hmm. and she would chop them up real fine because I was a picky eater.
Ah, okay. There we go.
And
more
she would put
later.
Them in there.
Okay, so we're not sure about purple potatoes. Collectively, Rick, are you? No, Rick's looking at me like.
It's a potato. How could it be bad?
Yeah, it's a potato.
As long as we don't put it in a potato salad.
Yeah, yeah. As long as it's warm, Rick's all in.
Well, the Germans make their potato salad warm, and I don't like it either. I can tolerate it, but I don't like it.
You know, Gene, I'm just going to stay on this side of the table. Rick's in a bad mood. I don't know what's going on over there today, but at any rate.
You just in the potato.
What potlucks have you been to? I want everybody in my church to know that I love their food. If you're listening now,
we're cutting into his livelihood.
Yes. I'm a big man. I need food. And I can't alienate my church potluck people.
Purple potatoes could potentially. Now, if you think about purple potatoes potentially used in primary prevention, which is actually what this article says, that what they could do, they could be used in primary prevention of colon cancer. That is, preventing people from developing it in the first place. Or if you had colon cancer, purple potatoes might be useful for secondary prevention of recurrences. However, this is still done in the laboratory. No studies in people to be sure this works. On the other hand, and this is the thing about nutritional research, it's probably not going to hurt you to eat some purple potatoes.
Amen, brother. I'm going to go buy some. I can eat a purple potato every day,
right.
I think.
So like remember the theme of this. Purple potatoes could potentially be used in primary prevention. That was actually written. That was part of the Penn State press release. I'm sure someone got a big kick out of writing that. But that's the nature of our show. Purple potatoes appear to lower your rate, have a potential to lower your rate of colon and rectal cancer by suppressing stem cells.
But, you know, think about this, though, because wouldn't it be really fantastic if they could, like, get some kind of extract out of those and drop the rates?
Here's our problem.
Wow.
We recognize this, and you say, well, I don't want to eat purple potatoes. That's weird. I think if I could just put that thing in a pill, I would certainly take a pill. And we do that over and over again. And what we need to do is to back away from all these pills and start changing our diets in ways that are healthy. Now, maybe purple potatoes will be a healthy addition to your diet. That's not been proven, but at least there's a potential there. And I like the idea of purple potato show. That's the purple potato you show. That's just great.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, saturated fats. This was a meta-analysis from the British Medical Journal published in August. It came out of McMaster University in Canada, but they looked at all the studies of saturated fats. Now, the problem with dietary studies in general is they are based on people's recall. Tell me what you had to eat the following days. How often did you eat this? How often did you eat that? That's the way most of these studies go.
And nobody can remember.
Right. And they can divide them up into cohorts. They'll have the high saturated fat cohort, the low saturated fat cohort. They will follow them. There have been studies that it's involved hundreds of thousands of people, but it has involved some flawed research because of the problems with remembering. However, this is what we know. Consumption of saturated fats is not associated with all-cause mortality, not associated with cardiovascular disease, not associated with heart disease, not associated with ischemic stroke, not associated with diabetes. That is, when we look to see if we can link those two, the more fats you take in, the more of those diseases you have, we cannot find that linkage. Consumption of trans fats, yes, is associated with all-cause mortality, total heart disease, total heart disease mortality, but saturated fats are not. And, you know, we all had this idea. My granddad ate butter every day and whole milk, and how come he lived to age 90? That sort of thing. We always wondered about that, but we thought we had a linkage between saturated fats and mortality. But when you analyze the totality of the evidence, we're not sure. There's something called the Seven Countries Study, which is a European study, and it was the one that really got us on to concern about saturated fats. It was a very badly flawed study and may have unduly influenced us. Now, think about that. Over the past 20 years, we have talked a lot about saturated fats and eliminating them from your diet completely.
Oh, I feel guilty. No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I understand. It's, you know, because there have been times, and I've made this, Rick's heard me say this over and over again, postmenopausal women on estrogens. It was something I was taught was the right thing to do, and I now believe is the wrong thing to do. And I think in the same way, the problem we ran into is that we replaced the saturated fats with higher levels of carbohydrates, which turned out not
And we initially
replaced them with trans fats, so the things we replaced them with turned out to be worse than the initial problem. Found reliable and strong positive associations between trans fats, again, and mortality, but the association between trans fats and stroke was actually less clear as well. They propose that the association between consumption of trans fats and mortality may reflect a higher intake of what they called industrial trans fats. I guess that's manufactured trans fats as opposed to what they called ruminant trans fats. Hmm. They're moving away. What I've heard is if you know what your food ate, grain-fed as opposed to industrial trans fats, that may be better. I think that's an opinion. I don't know that it's supported by that. This is what they propose. Maybe the reason that the trans fats data is a little contradictory. They suggest that dietary guidelines call for the removal of saturated fats and trans fats. The ones that do should consider the health implications of the nutrients that will be used to replace the fat. That is fine. If you've got something better than saturated fats, then by all means propose the substitution, but do not simply say eliminate this without recognizing the problems with whatever you substitute for it. So, Gene, how has this affected your dietary guidance for your hospital and your outpatients? What are you doing now that this has come out?
Well, you can't really change what you're doing until the research is done. So I haven't really changed anything at this point, but I do find it difficult sometimes to tell people those same things because I know that it's probably going to change.
So the guidelines that you are operating under have not changed to reflect this. Again, this just came out in August. I will point out as well, there was a large study in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and this was reported last week. Omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, if modest benefit trends, if you had dietary intake or used supplements, but they were not statistically significant. Saturated fatty acids, no discernible effect there in a different study. Monounsaturates, no effect, good or bad. Trans, again, a harmful effect was confirmed. So again and again, we're seeing trans fats are harmful, but again, they're on their way out in the U.S. This is not something you will need to be overly concerned with over the long run. This is the comment on the Annals study. It says that it's clear that omega-3 supplements with daily doses close to a gram in patients without established heart disease show no clear considerable benefit. For now, omega-3s may be used to treat hypertriglyceridemia, elevation of your triglyceride, your free fats in your bloodstream, but that's only a minority of patients. So what I'm seeing is a very clear and a very strong signal that we are changing our minds about what is good and what's bad about fats. First of all, eating fish is great.
I don't think that, I mean, nobody's telling you to go out and eat, you know, a bucket of butter, you know, or... So I think that it's going to be moderation, and we've said that forever, right, new dietitian?
Yes, that is my soapbox.
Mm-hmm. Is moderation. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that these saturated fats can actually help you feel full in a way that carbohydrates just aren't able to accomplish.
Oh, I tell people that they should have some fat with each meal because otherwise they're going to be hungry so fast that they're going to be looking for something to eat.
And the concept that you can eliminate fats and just be hungry is...
No, that's...
Yeah, it is not a workable. So what we've got to do, and again, you go back to those original five principles. If we are eating a plant-based diet, if we allow ourselves not trans fats, but some saturated fats to get a feeling. Yeah, olive oil is a really is the central part of that. If we limit our supplements, they really, without any proof of benefit across the board for supplements, except, and we'll say we need a source of vitamin B12, reliable source of B12. If we put those things together, we're going to come out with a diet that's very similar to what's being proposed now. But to answer, and one of our alert listeners actually asked this question on our Facebook page, what are we doing about saturated fats? And the answer is right now, again, from the dietitians, moderation. It's not time to go crazy on them, but you have to think about what you're putting in place of them. And if you are upping your carbohydrates to obtain a low-fat diet, then in fact, you may wind up gaining weight. You may wind up having trouble controlling your appetite.
Well, it's like, you know, years ago when we told people that olive oil was really healthy, you know, a lot of people, what they would do is they would continue to eat exactly what they had been eating and then just dump a bunch of olive oil on top of it all. No, trust me, this is true.
I know.
You know, and well, that's just not the way it works, right? So, yes, saturated fats may not be as bad as we thought, but that doesn't mean you want to...
I think that's the key to moderation, though.
Yes,
moderation
is
moderate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now, some people don't understand what moderate is, you know, and that's the challenge, I think, for dietitians, is to help people to understand what moderation is.
Right. If you can get to... There's two diets. There's one, the dietary approach to stop hypertension. It's called a DASH mm-hmm. diet. Yeah. And then there's this Mediterranean diet. And as best I can tell, one of the emphasis of the Mediterranean diet, it doesn't emphasize dairy products, low-fat dairy products, hardly at all. Mm. They're looking at fish, they're looking at nuts, and both of them emphasize vegetables.
Plant food, yeah.
Yeah, and plant foods. Either one of those, particularly the Mediterranean, can have a more powerful effect, if you properly follow it, than statins, stents, and a lot of interventions that we use to treat heart disease. The thing is, if we did this right, we could change our trajectory on heart disease, and we might be able to keep more people off medications if you took your diet seriously. Why don't you take your break seriously right now? You take a break, we will too, and we'll come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. You notice how depressed Rick is. We have shut off one of Rick's great pleasures of his life by criticizing church potlucks. And I want to say
my
that
church knows I love them.
And during the break,
absolutely love them.
This was very clear. Rick was distraught and wanted to make sure that everyone knows that he is a firm supporter of church potlucks and all the many variety of foods that one might encounter there. Gene and I, on the other hand, are
eating the green beans.
That's right. We were being excommunicated from the potluck
circuit.
You're
the guys who leave early and go eat out. I know what you do.
No, you eat before you go.
No, we'll make a donation to the youth if that's what you want. That's perfectly fine. And then we'll go get us some food where we know how it's prepared.
Where you don't know where it's being, you know. That's okay.
Hey, let's do some introductions here. With us, from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, dietitian to the stars.
Aren't you glad I got that?
Registered dietitian Gene Jones. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Tony.
And dietitian to future stars. Registered dietitian, clinical dietitian, St. Clair Regional, Andrea Campbell. Hi, Andrea.
Hello.
Our sponsor for the final time, the 5 Steps for a Heart-Healthy Diet, reminding you this is it's a mashup of the 2015 International Conference on Nutrition and Medicine and the European Society of Cardiology, their special session on what should you eat to lead a heart-healthy life. And these are 5 recommendations. 1, this is the key one. This one will not change, in our opinion. Build your diet around plant-based foods all day, every day. You've got to plan ahead. You may have to put some to chop some foods the night before, to take some fruits or vegetables along, to add to your meals. If you are eating, especially the during lunchtime, it's Friday at lunch, everybody wants to go out to a local restaurant or something like that, and you're really going to have to plan this out if you're going to follow guideline number 1. Number 2, minimize refined grains, added salt, and sweeteners. Opt for fresh fruits and vegetables. 3, include some nuts and seeds. The U.S. group says avoid oils. The European group does not. I believe the European group is going to win on this. I believe olive oil, in particular, is going to be the cornerstone of oils in the future.
Yeah.
The others just don't have the health benefits. Four, avoid foods containing trans fat. The U.S. group adds saturated fats. The European group does not. We believe that this will be changing. And again, this is the latest recommendations. And Gene mentions this idea of avoiding saturated fats is still in place more in America than in Europe. We believe it's going to change, but the evidence is not very strong that saturated fats are strongly linked to heart disease or heart disease mortality. Number five, first time I've seen this coming from the U.S. group, and I really liked it. Have a reliable source of vitamin B12. Again, if you're on acid suppressing medicines, if you're over age 50, it gets harder to absorb B12. Make sure that you are taking some extra because you may not be able to get it from your diet as you did when you were younger. That's our sponsor, the 5 Steps for a Heart Healthy Diet. This next study came from the August 3rd issue of Pediatrics, and it came from Duke. And so right away you think to yourself, I'm not so sure. Duke is the potato salad of the church potluck. You know, because you just never know with Duke. Honestly, you don't. But this is from Nancy Zucker, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, Duke University, and they are concerned that overly picky eating, and certainly overly picky, could be a sign of deeper psychiatric problems. It is not uncommon, says the Duke people, for young children to turn up their noses at a variety of foods. Up to 20% of parents saying their 2 to 5-year-old children are sometimes or often selective about what they will eat. And I think I myself, my family knows that in the Amazing Race, should our family go on the Amazing Race, we are very good at navigating. We speak multiple languages, but if I had to eat some unusually prepared vegetables, we would be going home. I mean, forget the live squid that are tentacles are sticking to my esophagus, all that stuff. Quite simply, I could get knocked out of the race with some artichokes.
No, if it's plant-based food, I'm okay, but ooh.
Yeah,
no.
I'm saying that I could do it. So I'm certainly enough of a picky eater to cause that. Jean, meanwhile, is a picky eater. She claims that she would eat anything plant-based, but in fact, if the lettuce has a slight color to it, Jean will pick right over that. So I think you're a picky
eater. I like fresh food.
Wait, meat,
I'm not going to.
Discoloration is rotten?
No. I said if it's wilted and brown.
I don't think
brown.
Tony said that. Tony said that.
See, I'm saying. I'm just saying.
No,
Have we not taken one for the team?
If y'all are going to assault my church podcast, let me get the facts right.
I'm just saying. I will say, we went to a local establishment and got a very fine salad. It had a fairly big piece of ice in it.
Well, that's okay. It's ice.
Yeah.
It's iceberg lettuce.
But where the ice contacts the lettuce, there was the place.
Oh, that's different. I'm talking about...
Back to the Duke study. They screened 3,400 children, ages 2 to 5, treated at Duke's pediatric primary care clinics for the risk of anxiety. They found 900 children who screened high. And then they took a random sample of 200 of the remaining youths that didn't screen high. So, believe it or not, they have 900 2 to 5-year-old anxious Duke-supporting children.
That's a scary thought.
It is. I mean, any way you look at this, this is as terrifying as potato salad in my mind.
Tell them that they were, I mean, you know, what is this thing with anxiety?
They screened. Right. So these kids, they did questionnaires, they talked to the parents, and these were high anxiety kids. The parents completed an assessment of their child's psychopathology. Boy, you ask my mom, and she would be glad to complete an assessment of my psychopathology. But these kids' parents actually told on them, and they also had questions about selective eating. Now, they said, if you didn't like broccoli, that's not a red flag. Preschoolers typically dislike cruciferous vegetables.
My kids ate cruciferous vegetables.
Okay, so what are cruciferous vegetables, before I make fun of you?
You know, like broccoli and cauliflower, those.
Okay, cruciferous vegetables. Again, kids, preschoolers, other than Gene's kids, typically dislike cruciferous vegetables. Rick, you're a big broccoli guy at age 2.
At age 2?
Yeah.
Whatever was put in front of me.
Okay.
There you go.
So you didn't cry, you didn't throw tantrums.
I don't know.
My son, I still remember putting green beans in his pocket and excusing himself to go to the bathroom. I am not making that up.
At 2.
That's pretty much a 4 to 6 year old. All right,
thing.
2 to 5. I think by age 5, he had the green bean disposal thing going pretty well.
Well, boy, you're trying to make him eat them. See, I never tried to make my kids eat things they didn't like.
You just didn't feed them anything else.
We didn't use a whip or an electric shock, but we did set green beans in front of him. He knew he had to eat one in order to leave the table, and eating one was more than he could. could stand. So he went and flushed it down the toilet and then proclaimed himself through. Children with selective eating at either moderate or severe levels were more likely to have elevated symptoms of anxiety and depression, to experience hypersensitivity to taste and texture, to have mothers with elevated anxiety and family conflicts around. I mean, this sounds horrendous. It sounds absolutely horrendous. Apparently, though, these psychopathological families, the kids turned out to be picky eaters.
Well, they just give them all a big dose of Xanax and then feed them broccoli.
And this is the person who's in charge of giving dietary advice. Look, hey, what you need? Some Xanax, some broccoli. We can get this thing there.
What's the big deal with anxiety?
Well,
where is this coming from? Well,
but let's flip that around for a second. If you eat anything, you've got to be a pretty happy kid, right? I mean, that's the opposite. Do you know a kid that's depressed, a kid that's moody, that eats everything set in front of them? I don't think so.
But what are they? What do little kids have to be depressed about?
Listen, some of these parents, you've got a parent that's talking to Duke about you, then that is pretty depressing.
Okay.
I'm just throwing it out there, That's all I'm doing. Rick, you're not a picky eater. You're not a... I was, actually.
That's not true.
I was a horribly picky eater.
I mean, I guess picky's a tricky word.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't like the way things are prepared.
I don't like kale. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's allowed.
I don't, spinach, kale, that kind of thing. There's certain things I just don't care for. The funny thing is, I love tomatoes when they're cooked, but I can't stand them raw. Is that picky?
Huh.
I don't know. Some people would say yes.
No, but see, that's a preparation thing. So, no, that's not picky. I don't like cooked spinach, but I like raw spinach.
Yeah.
I like sushi. Does that count?
Ooh. Yeah. It counts very much. Look at this. See, this side of the table, we got three people that would get knocked out of the amazing race.
We've established that Rick will eat anything but kale, okay? And potato salad.
And cold salad. And seaweed.
Yeah, fair enough. That's right.
That's
but good. But again, I believe, amazing race, all you got to do, eat the sushi, $1 million. I am so sorry.
But Tony, let's be honest. Would you even get... I mean, my wife and we joke about this all the time. Mary and I, we talk about... We kill each other trying to see who's gonna make the directions. Okay, the sign says go that way. No. We do. We'd never get out of America.
Well, my wife... My wife and my son, my oldest son, both have very good sense of directions, and they tolerate.
One of them has to lead.
I know, but they so far, they neither one of them will tolerate criticism, and so it would be interesting to see them fight it out. Me, I'm in the back seat. I may be awake or not. I'm not sure. So we will, as far as I'm concerned, we'll go somewhere. I'm just not really sure where.
Now, see, my family, I have like no sense of direction. I have literally been lost in my backyard before. It's a big backyard. And it's like somebody else is going to have to direct me, but when it comes to what we're going to eat, Gene is calling the shots.
Okay. Now, Andrew, you said you were picky.
Oh, my God. I was so picky.
She's still picky?
Yes, I am. I was about to get into the textures and things. When I was little, there was on my hand this many things I could, five things I'd eat.
Right.
I would eat canned spaghetti, beef jerky, orange juice, sliced cheese, and sometimes bread.
Sometimes
bread. Okay. It had to be stale bread.
Beef jerky
bread.
And orange
stale
juice.
Bread.
Right there you go. Wash it down with some toothpaste, and man, you've got a meal.
That was Tang.
And it had to be certain brands of orange juice, but it was bad enough to where, I would have to go to the doctor and stuff because I was a failure to thrive child, and it was hard enough that it caused my mom to pull her hair out.
And you were anxious?
Not really, no.
No, but you were fine. Your mom was anxious.
Yeah, it was my mom that was anxious. I was fine. There was nothing going on.
Yeah, back to this Duke study, I really wonder if it's a family that has all these conflicts and anxiety and so forth, if that doesn't transfer over.
I think kids pick up anxiety,
a child in a happy home that just happens to not like foods. I don't think this applies.
We try to make kids do too much these days. They just
need to be kids.
They just need to be kids.
Let them play, parents.
I still have texture problems and stuff. Like, I can't have any sauces on any of my sandwiches. It's always in a side thing so I can dip just a little bit.
Meatball subs out for you.
No, I can't.
No, well, here's
like
one. All right, the fruit that goes in the Jello.
Oh, I'm God. Sorry. I can't.
Jello, yeah. Fine.
Oh, God.
All right, so we got three. Rick, fruit and Jello does not bother you at all, does it?
Only the Jello's green.
I hate Jello.
Okay. I love Jello. I just
Jello,
can't have
but
anything
no fruit.
In it.
I can't eat the fruit. There you go. We're on the same page, Andrea. I know exactly where you're coming from. Next article. let's face it, I'm not sure this is great. This is great radio.
No, I'm not either. We're having fun.
Eating on the Move. This is from New York Times, August 31st. Researchers recruited 60 adult women, split them into three groups. That would be difficult, but they did. And asked the women in each group to eat a cereal bar under different conditions. Once while walking, once while talking to a friend, and once while watching a TV clip. They were then given a taste test where they could eat as many M&Ms, carrot sticks, grapes, and potato chips as
they
wanted.
Can I do this?
Yeah. This is, I tell you, any of the ones where they put a big bowl of snacks in front of me and see how much I eat. First of all, I'm going to skew the study. I'm going to want a second bowl.
What happens if it's a church?
Yeah.
Well, M&Ms, okay, I mean, M&Ms?
If carrots?
No,
I'll
if you bring M&Ms to church, I'm good. I am solid with M&Ms.
And I'll eat carrots as long as they've not been prepared.
Yeah, carrots are fine. Not a problem. The people watching their weight ate less than the others from the bowls after they finished eating the cereal bar. And if they had eaten the cereal bar in front of the TV, they ate less. But the women who had eaten the cereal bar while walking ate much more during the taste test, a significant amount more. The point is, the kind of food that you grab on your way out of the house, the kind of food that you just walk by and grab, their theory is that doesn't register as food. If you sit down with a plate and eat something, you say, I have had a meal. On the other hand, if you walk and grab stuff, you won't do that.
I'm notoriously bad for that.
You are?
Yes, to pick up something and grab as we walk out.
No, I don't.
And then I'll look at Corey and I'll say, I'm hungry. We haven't eaten anything. Can
we go get something? So, Gene, you will not eat unless you're sitting. I mean, I don't want to make absolutes, but in general.
Occasionally, I'll eat in the car if I'm, like, really in a hurry or we're traveling or something. But no, generally speaking, no, I'm not going to, like, grab something and walk out the door with it. I'm going to sit down and eat before I leave.
Are you an eating in motion guy, Rick?
Absolutely. I spend 145 miles a day in the car.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's impossible. Now, I guess technically I'm not moving. The car is.
Okay. Well, this was walking, and I'm not sure what eating in the car, you know, granted you're on the go, but this was walking. And I do believe the idea is that if you don't recognize it as a meal, if it's simply calories going in and you don't recognize it as a meal, it may be more difficult.
Well, no, but whenever you do weight management counseling, that's one of the things that you recommend people do is that they sit down and eat a meal at the table, you know.
Yeah, you have to identify it as a meal.
Register it. I am. Yeah. I know.
Well, the truth of the matter is, again, I've talked a lot on this show, and I just talked to a group of medical students about eating at the ballpark or eating at the football field, places like that. Again, if you're a parent of a small child that's in a rec league ball or in high school sports, you have to do a lot of meals that aren't necessarily at a table if you want to support your kids. It's simply that's the way the schedule works out. There's not really much else you can do. Speaking of the way things work out, it has worked out that we are finished with this show. Are we not? Okay, thank you very much. I would like to give thanks to our guests, Jean Jones, who has reclaimed her title as Dietitian to the Stars, Manager of Clinical Nutrition Services at St. Clair Regional Medical Center, and following closely behind eagerly plotting her own takeover.
I could take that. I'll take Starlet.
From St. Clair Regional, clinical dietitian Andrea Campbell. Rick, get us off the air.
Special thanks to Moorhead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a health radio show designed to assist weight loss by partially filling the ear. Health Matters is applied to the ear and filled with salt water, causing it to expand into a spherical shape.
Health Matters occupies space in the ear, reducing the appetite. Our show is designed to be used with a long-term supervised diet and behavior modification program. It is indicated for adult patients who have failed more conservative weight reduction radio shows. Health Matters may remain in your ear for up to 6 months.
Health Matters should not be used with other balloon-shaped radio shows. It should not be used if you have had prior intestinal surgery, inflammation of your GI tract, or cancer.
Unexpected gastrointestinal bleeding has occurred with Health Matters placement. If you have a large hiatal hernia or severe gastroesophageal reflux, you should not listen to our show.
Patients must be advised that Health Matters is intended to be placed for 6 months, at which point the show must be removed. Longer periods of Health Matters increase the risk of deflation, which can lead to obstruction and risk for death. The risk of these events is significantly higher when the show was inflated to a larger volume greater than 1 hour.
To prevent ulcer, it is recommended that you begin a program of daily proton pump inhibitors for 3 to 5 days prior to listening to our show, so the gastric acid will be suppressed on the day of the show.
You must be monitored closely during the entire show in order to detect the development of possible complications. Each patient should be instructed regarding the symptoms of show deflation, intestinal obstruction, and other complications. Patients need to be evaluated and the show removed within 6 months of placement.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we debate whether swallowing your pride helps you lose weight on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.